Can you say something, tell us something about what you think the role of an architect is today, what it should be, what it can be?
Well, truly, Ray, I think that you made the question that it's been done all over the world, because I think that at some point the definition of the role of the architect that we have been carrying on for several centuries now became I believe it became a little bit pretentious. And well, not a little bit, very pretentious and very problematic, no? I mean, I had always been thinking since I went out of school, my thought was, really, I have the capacities of building space that will be used by people that we influence and shape their lives. I first believed I had not the tools. I had not I really literally thought I had learned nothing at school. I was seeing my colleagues very confident, knowing that they could build things. And I was like, oh, I don't know what I did in school. And then later on, I realized that I actually was more uncomfortable with the way it was thought and taught to me than anything else. No. Since then, I understood that, first of all, I don't know how anybody else lives in this planet, and I would never know. It's not something that I didn't learn in school. It's just something that you cannot do. And the second thing I realized later on, no, is that not only we don't know how anybody else lives, is we don't have the right to decide how anybody else lives. No, we like one person should not decide how others should inhabit this planet. So in a way, I started kind of revolving on that subject and questioning very much what is the role then of an architect since the beginning because of that, no? And I believe that that is one of the questions that now is taking place not only within our field, no, it's within our society. So I don't have a clear answer to what's the role of the architect, but what I am trying to do, what is my role in this moment, in this planet, is to be able to pose questions and to create platforms for anybody to inhabit their own way. I wish that we could enable a society, as a collective, as a community, a way so we could all build our own environments. In a way, we do, but it's very biased by many ways. So how can we include more or everybody to think and build the space we inhabit? That's a question we all have. And how can we as architects be those enablers of those processes is what we do. No, I don't know if that's the role of the architect in general, but that's at least the one we're taking on.
We know that over the last what 30 years or so, we've had this perhaps problem of the this architecture phenomenon, whether that's in glamorous wealthy cities such as Abu Dhabi or Miami Beach, for example. But it seems to me that's become very much a kind of a dead end. So I think, if I may suggest so, that you're part of a generation that is moving beyond that idea of the pretense that an architect can be responsible for every detail, every curve, every corner of a building. And perhaps we might just say a quick word about how the office is structured. Of course, I want to come back to the theme, City of Rooms. But before we get to City of Rooms, we should touch base on the fact that it's Tatiana Bilbao Studio.
Exactly.
So maybe you can just tell us a quick word or two about how the studio is organized and how you came up to this formulation.
I mean, I think that Tatiana Bilbao Studio tells a lot of the struggles that that my generation of architects have, because we are the sandwich generation, no? Between this star architecture generation that kind of came, like we were born from, and the seeing the next generation moving ahead, no? And this is why it's called Tatiana Bilbao and Studio, because it has my name, but then it has a studio, which is the collective. And In our case, and at some point, not so long ago, I was like, please, can we erase my name of that office? They said no. I don't feel comfortable because it's not only me. First of all, we don't believe that architecture is an individual act. We believe profoundly that architecture is a collective act, and we build it collectively. So it's a collective already that it starts maybe in a less communal way inside our office, but it pretends to be very communal, no? And it really opens itself to collaborate in many regards. Since day one, we not only work horizontally in our office, but we work horizontally with everybody that is involved in the process of building that certain specific project or many others or thought or anything, but also kind of really it pretends that to be also the architecture, it is out there, no? That is, it's only a seed that we kind of start to plant somewhere to be kind of in evolution with its own process of time and with its own community in many, many regards, no? That's the hope, at least. And that is why it's called Tatiana Bilbao Studio, no? And I mean, talking more mundane things, we are six partners, Alba Cortés, Katia Bilbao, Juan Pablo Benyure, Mariano Castillo, Soledad Rodriguez, and myself, who kind of decided to come together to be able to form a structure that really is organized and is able to deliver things, because at some point we have to function, you know, as a structure. And then we have 55 colleagues that are working. Some have even different backgrounds, not only architecture, but certainly there's all types of people there, which really we enhance, no? A diverse collective coming from diverse backgrounds, diverse countries. We have people from many parts of the world, and in order to bring kind of more diverse points of view, no? I really always kind of support the idea of confronting ourselves with even the contrary of people to us, not to understand how, well, contrary is a bad word to be said, but people who really think completely different from us, not to be able to then really produce platform for more diverse settings and people.
I can see some folks have come in at the back. If you'd like, there are some seats up front, so please feel free to come forward and take a seat up here. And so I've two words I hear a lot in the words of Tatiana and her colleagues are community and the collective. And I think this is where perhaps these are key words perhaps in trying to understand the shift away from what we might generalize as the Starkitect phenomenon. To my mind, there's something in parallel between our in sync, perhaps, between the idea of working collectively and then thinking about building collectivity or communal spaces. And to me, I hope in the exhibition that you'll see connections between issues of housing, which of course are so pertinent, so important across the entire world these days, and the idea of, let's say, urbanism, of collective urban space, of shared spaces in the urban realm. So maybe you can say a few words about how housing for you connects to issues of urbanization.
So I profoundly believe, and the way we really think of architecture is that it provides a primary form of care. We cannot exist. We are the only organisms in our own in our ecosystem that cannot subsist without a structure that protects us. We cannot live out in the wilderness. But if we have demonstrated also a society that is not only a structure. No, it's not a simple thing. We're much more complex beings. And as such, we need structures that hold and inspire our lives. And for me, I use inspiration in a much broader sense that it's been reduced to like the sense of, oh, I'm inspired by this place, no, spiritually. For me, it's even physically, no, how a space needs to inspire life. It's being able to nurture this body, both physically and spiritually, in order to grow, to be able to, this body to grow and to thrive in the world. No? And that's, I think, the purpose of architecture and the basic need it provides, because otherwise we cannot exist in this planet. And we individuals, apart from needing a roof on itself, need two very important things as well to grow and to thrive. It's one, it's our own individual self. It needs to be a physical body that it's well nurtured and cared to really be able to hold life. And a second is the other. We don't exist without the other. To start with, we need another body to be able to be born. And then to continue to exist, we need another person or persons, no, a collective to exist. So we are these beings that are being held by a collective in a very important part of ourselves, no. So that's why we always have thought of architecture in this way. We think we need the body to be held individually, but we need the collective for it. That body to live in this planet. So these like kind of two conditions are those who we always address in our projects. And that's why domesticity has been central to our research, to our practice, and to our research. And it's the basic unit in which we depart from. So we think very often on this relationship, no? So it's not only this individual body that needs to rest, that needs to have its intimate space in order to get nutrition for many things. It is also the connection with the other that needs to exist to hold it. So it's never the house, it's always the house and the city. And it's never the city, it's always the city and the house.
As you can see, Tatiana, you can imagine, I'm sure, she's an experienced teacher. So I should perhaps have mentioned earlier that, of course, Tatiana has been teaching at Yale now for how many years?
10
years.
Next spring.
As you can imagine, a fantastic teacher and galvanizer of the forces within that school. Yeah.
Thank you.
So this is thinking about the United States and Mexico and how the cultures might be different. In the U.S. System, in your experience, maybe you can tell us a little bit about how these ideas of the collective, of housing, the, if you like, the political needs of housing, what differences do you see between the two systems? And how can you give us an example, perhaps, of a project in the United States that you feel is moving the discussion forward in the ways you more broadly wish to proceed?
So, first of all, the reason why I teach in the United States is because I believe that we have become a very symbiotic region, no? The North America really is becoming one entity in many regards. And so what happens in the United States influences very much what happens in Mexico, and what happens in Mexico influences very much what happens in the US. And in many ways, culturally, economically, socially, these things are shifting and are being directly kind of exhibited in how we build spaces, no? And I felt when I was being educated that I had no real knowledge on what was happening in terms of how space was being defined in the United States. And I'm literally not kidding that I barely knew the architects who were defining this side of the world when I was studying. And I think it happens the other way around the same, no? I've now tested it that it does. So people in the United States, the education looks very much on how the Occidental world had emerged, no? From the ancient Greeks and Romans to today, but basically influences from Europe and
like some of the spaces here in the museum.
Exactly. But really never studied what happens in this continent, no, or what happens on the other side of the border. So for me, it was really important to have this connection, for me to learn what is this country about, and for me to bring a little bit of what my country is, or also bring them back, because I always do studios that are placed in Mexico. I always bring my students to Mexico. I've helped create a new summer program, which is bringing students to Mexico from Yale School of Architecture in order to start kind of creating that link. No, so that is the first thing on why I teach. And what do I think is that obviously the things and the precepts that are being placed in the United States as being a country that creates so much influence around the world have been translated in many, many ways and in many other countries. And hopefully they were translated. Some of the times have just been copied, no? For example, the way or the idea, no, the ideas of living in the 50s, 60s, in the suburbs with the connection, the idyllic connection towards nature and the fields, no, have created a form of living that is now being exported to everywhere in the world. It had been copied. Nevertheless, here it has been almost going back to criticizing that, no, but in many other countries they're just starting to do create suburbia and etc. So I believe that it's an important source, no, to be in the source of that, but also to be able to influence. And you're asking me about some projects that I see moving forward. I mean, in general, I have seen a profound transformation in schools. So when I arrived to teach, housing was not a topic that it was not taught. The studios were revolving around museums, airports, office buildings,
institutions.
And right now there's a profound shift that has happened, because in every school, there's 3-4 studios that only speak about housing. So the conversation has been shifted. And for me, that's the most important project around housing that is happening here.
Talk to us about model making, drawings, and collages. You can see upstairs, those who haven't been upstairs, we have floors with these wonderful one-to-one drawings and tables with each of the model that's 1 to 100. And for non-architects in the audience, the fact that all the models are the same scale is, I think, really very interesting point of view, point of departure, perhaps, in this decision-making process. But I think I'd like to ask about the, we were talking earlier about my ineptitude with technology. So many architects in practice, for understandable reasons, are looking at screens all day, and they're making drawings that the quality of which is very much dependent upon the program they're using, etc. Mm-hmm. So talk to us a little bit about how you see the way that architects represent and explore ideas in now, what are we, the second third of the 21st
no,
century?
Third.
Well, it's not too far off. It's, what is it, 9 years, 9 years away. as we're moving forward, and as you're, of course, a teacher as well as a practitioner, how can architects use their own individual talents to better help create a more equitable built world?
Maybe I'm also a part of that crowd of non-architects. Maybe I'm the non-architect. I don't know. But I, for me, since I started, I'm a zero technological person. I studied in a moment where Mexico had kind of started to become global. So we really needed to have kind of the global understanding on how things were going to start to be made, but we didn't have the tools yet. So in architecture, it happened, no? So we were taught about all these kind of challenges, about all these ideas of challenging geometries, but we didn't have the computers that challenges those geometries, no? So we were doing it there very analog, in very analog ways. And when I started practicing, obviously I wanted to be part of that trend, no, of challenging geometries and these things. But very rapidly, I understand that for me, architecture was not about geometries. What about people? It was about, this is another of the questions where I thought I'd never learn anything, no, because I really thought of architecture in a very different way. And it was always about the conversations, about the stories, about the experiences that happen in space that define space, no? And that geometry was a tool for that to exist, but that it was not a kind of the driver, no, of the possibility. And I think that when I started to understand that, I also started to challenge the way we represent things. For me also, it was very hard to think that I could understand those stories and those experiences and those conversations and those things, and then use a computer to translate those. No, as I said, for me, geometry is a tool. It was not the architecture. And so then that was kind of on the side always. And we always kind of created architecture from conversations, from drawings, from things that we put on top of things, and from physical relationships. That is an important thing, because I always have thought also, no, that the process of creating a physical space, it comes from the mind, it's inside there, and then it becomes physical at some point. And then directly being physical, as for a drawing, as for a model, then it's a direct process of that. So we do it like that. We use also computers, of course, but they are helping tools, and they're not the producing elements, no? So our representation is very manual because of that. It's the first thing we do, and it's the first response. And yeah, I think that's the process on how we do it.
I think one of the very strong characteristics about the drawings and the collages is that you see people in them. And as you, and indeed in the photographs, Ewan Band's photographs, as you know, again, for non-architects in the audience, you might be surprised, but often architects don't show people in the audience, right? It's a very kind of slightly perverted kind of view of a building or of a space. So it seems to me there's something, the way you've talked about the office being a group of people, not just you, but I think that also is reflected in the fact that you seem happy to often collaborate with other architects. So I'm not quite sure what's on the screen behind me, but I know some of these projects have collaborative natures. The very, very early project for the pilgrimage route in Jalisco for Easter week, for example. We might just say a little word about that. And up to the most recent project, which is the housing project called Olive West in St. Louis, where there are at least four practices and perhaps more as the project evolves, working together. So let's think about making some connection between the idea of designing for communal spaces in the cities, for example, and the fact that you work in a community of like-minded designers.
Well, and that also starts or ends with collage. Collage is a collective image, no, for many reasons. Profoundly, it's a collective image. It's been done by different parts, so it's already a collection of things. But also what I really like about collage is that it really includes everybody that is consuming that image, because it is interpreted by each person on its own precepts. And if you pass a collage around this public, everybody will have a totally different interpretation. And this is really the very important aspect about collage, that we really use as a tool. And that we really hope that our architecture does the same, is able to be consumed the same, no? So that it really allows you to be part of the conversation, no? A collage allows you to be part of the image. And as much as we want the architecture that allows you to be part of that space, no? And I think that for it to be successful, it needs this diverse set of parts. The collage needs that diversity, no? And the same to the architecture to be that, it needs also to be a collection of things. So we always collaborate in every project. Sometimes it's more visible out there because then there's more names added, but it always is the same process, no? And in the case, the first project that it really kind of worked like that was a pilgrimage route. I was asked to create this set of, let's say, stop points or identification spaces.
Shelters
along a route, a pilgrimage route that has happened for 200 years or more in Jalisco. And I thought that it was a very important ritual for no less than 2 million people. How could I would do that myself? No, and I thought, well, I need definitely much more minds in this process, and we need to be many, many people building these. So I invited Derek Delecam. At the same time, we invited Rosana Montiel. And then we invited eight or nine different people from different parts of the world to collectively decide how we would intervene in this route and who would do what. And this is the same kind of spirit that we've been working in many, many projects. Every project poses a different opportunity and in a different way. The project that you mentioned here in St. Louis, Missouri, it is a block of 21 houses that I think 18 are built already. I think 8 are inhabited. I don't know its exact numbers, but more or less, those are the proportions. And we really thought that to understand how to create a community, a block in St. Louis, Missouri, to infill a block with 21 houses, single houses, to do something really different, to pose a different question for this city on how to build a community, we needed to start with a community. So we invited three other firms. We actually wanted to invite a lot of more, but it practical reasons, we invited three and we four, who are each of us thinking a different type of house. And then it's going to be repeated with some tricks. It's repeated already some, and some others will be repeated with some differences and nuances in a kind of a ground that allows different types of relationships, no? From more private, intimate relationships between the inhabitants of the small interior house towards the relationships that are having those in people towards the next neighbor and towards the collective.
So if we're thinking about houses and housing and intimate spaces in the city, as a very strong direction in your work and that of many younger architects now, I guess we can't quite forget the institution and the bigger projects. And I'm sure you don't, if the evidence, I'm not sure what's on the screen, but I know the images on the screen represent many very large institutions. So how does this idea of the more intimate space, communal space, how does that transfer, or how does it appear? How is it made manifest in larger projects such as the Estoa University Center in Monterrey?
That is a very good question. And I think it was also asked a little bit before when we were touring the exhibition. Our architecture departs from the individual. Even if it's a building of 100,000 square meters, which is 1 million square feet, our architecture is always thought from one individual and how this one relates to the others, no? So every building is thought from the most intimate possibility of this space towards the most collective one. So it's an addition, no? It's not a division, no? Normally, and at least architecture most recently has been thought, no, as this volume, no, as this object that should hold these different activities. In our case, the architecture is built from one individual, its own possibility of existing here, and then the relationship towards others. So as I said, it's the addition of spaces and not the division of an object. That's how our architecture comes about.
So it's a little now inside baseball here, but this question, I thought. But if you're thinking about institutions such as Mazatlan or Monterrey, and now you're building churches, so how does the idea in your mind, in your issues about the individual and the collective, how is that being reflected in the liturgical architecture, let's say, that's now coming forward?
Well, we're doing, it's crazy, I don't know why, since we started, we have been designing these spaces that touch a lot these process, ritualistic processes, specifically Catholic, I guess it's because we are a 95% Catholic country. In the pilgrimage route is one example of that. No, this is a Catholic pilgrimage route. Although we were hired by the government and it was very specific that it shouldn't touch any aspects of the Catholic religion, it is a Catholic pilgrimage route. No, and then we designed three other churches that never were built. And then 8 years ago, we were asked by a Cistercian order, which is Catholic in Germany, to design a monastery. I'm not going to go into it because it's very, very, very important project that has not only, I always say it's not only a lifetime project because it's going to last the rest of my life and beyond. It's a life-changing project. And I think that what really struck me about this project is realizing that the monastery is the ultimate domestic space. And it is really that because it's the only typology that I ever found that is thought to hold a body, to physical body, to live the spiritual life, no? And that is intrinsically linked with that position of holding a body, understanding the necessities of one body, of the intimate self, of the collective self, but also of the ritual that needs to exist in order for this body to survive and to thrive. And for me, then it draws a lot of things and a lot of ideas of the whole built environment of this planet, just from thinking on this very kind of, for me, basic unit, no? And the parish church we're building that we're presenting here, it's a very different project. And it was very hard to think of it in that way because it is a very different project, no? Although it is a church, and obviously the monastery has three churches, one main one and then two chapels, we really struggled because that is a community project. No? This is a housing project and this is a public project. It's very different, no? The monastery and the church.
So the monastery having a private nature and the church being an outward.
Absolutely, and the monastery is a place to live for these monks. It's not a community building, no, in any regard. It's not a public one, and it's a living quarters for a community. And the parish church is a public space of gathering. No, it's a very different project, and really, what we really thought is how to our first question to design this church is how to hold a community in order to hold this community in communion with a larger force, which is God in this case, that this community believes on, no? And we literally translated that into space, and we created kind of this very big communal space that gathers the community together. It creates the possible conditions for a community to be together in a public space because Monterrey has a very extreme weather. And then how to transition from that and hold that community to provoke this interaction with this ritual that is happening inside is the larger question in here. And it was, and you see the result in the design already there.
So more rooms in the city, but rather special, rather specific rooms.
Rather specific rooms, exactly.
I'm conscious of time, but I hope we might have one or two questions. I hope somebody has a question for, oh, there's Dennis. Sorry, Dennis, I didn't spot you earlier. One or two questions for Tatiana would be wonderful if you have.
Thank you very much for the presentation and for the tour that you gave before. I wanted to ask you if you could elaborate a little bit on basically, well, I would say the aesthetics. Like you said, the geometry is not the first thing that you think of. You think of more of the experience. But then eventually, like in your projects are very, very distinctive. So could you please elaborate on that? Thanks.
Yeah, of course. As I said, I think the definition, the aesthetic definition of the space is the one that provokes everything to happen, no, at the end. So it's really important, but it's not what drives, no, the profoundly that. So it's what gives the possibility of. So then the process of translating or creating those spaces for those ideas to exist, it becomes a real physical process that uses geometry and other tools to materiality, no, and in structure and these things to exist. Every decision is based upon the conceptual imagination of the experience of the space, no? And whenever we are stuck, for example, we are in a designing and we're like, we don't know how to do and we don't know how to continue, then we go back and think, what is the main idea that is driving us, no? For example, the church, we're talking about the church. We were stuck at some point with the design. And we return, no, okay, what is the essence here? It's like we need to really bring this community, and we really need this community to enter this space. So in communion, they really think themselves as part of this collective that is, no, understanding that there's a major force out there, no? So how is this space? What geometry would help us to do that? And then we start testing, no? And we start testing literally, no? Schemes in different volumes that in to see how does that happens. And in the case of the church, for example, we had all these notions, and then we started testing volumes, but we never bounced them back with the notions and the concepts that we were trying to achieve, nor the experiences we were trying to create in this space. And so it was not working at all. So then we said, okay, let's erase, go back, and let's on what is a space, what it's a volume, what it's a representation, what it's a materiality that really allows us to reinforce our ideas and create then the experience. And it's not a process that can be better described than what I just said, because it's not a linear process and it's never the same, no, but it based on those strategies.
Mine is not really a question, but I just wanted to I'm from Mexico myself, and when I moved to Pittsburgh, when I started looking for a job as an architect, I encounter like a lot of the firms been hesitant about me being educated in Mexico, like kind of like doubted. So I just wanted to point out that it means a lot to see a firm from Mexico with projects both in Mexico and in the US being on the spotlight like you guys are. It means a lot. And then it means a lot because it's happening, like your exhibit is opening on Hispanic Heritage Month. So that also like brings it to a whole new level. But I just wanted to point out that like, I think like the US and Mexico, how our cultures are not that different. Is that diversity needed, and how that how cultures are intertwined, and how much we can collaborate, and how important it is for people here to see this kind of things happening. And despite our backgrounds or because of our backgrounds, we can also bring that architecture here. So I just want to say gracias to both you and the Museum of Art for making this exhibit possible, and like just to point out like how meaningful it is for people like me to be able to see it here.
Gracias. Muchas gracias.
Dana, I don't think we can beat that for a final comment. thank you. Thank you very much. It's a very beautiful comment.
Thank you very much. Very beautiful.
Thank you all for coming. The exhibition is up until June, so I hope you'll come back and visit many times. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.